Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'ah Daf Chof Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 9 lines from the top of Daf Chof Gimel. Dorash Rav Gvia Mibeik Seal, Apischa Debe Resh Galusa. Rav Gvia, from the place called Beik Seal, he lectured at the entrance of the house of the Reish Galusa, the exilarch. Keturah Shari. He said, Keturah is allowed. Amar Le'a Meimar, my Keturah. And Hameimar asks, what is Keturah? You'll see a marking, a diamond that we have, and on the side under our Mivneh heading, we indicate Shnei Lishnos Ve'Ameimar. There are two versions of Ameimar. So, Ameimar, in this version, is asking, what is Keturah? E Keturah Bidi. If Keturah is Keturah Bidi, Rashi explains what this is. We look at Rashi across from here. She'oisin lebote shokayim lebote yodayim shechaluke hanoshim. The sleeves of the arms and the legs of women's garments. She'mekamtin oison al eitz. There is a kimut, is a fold. It seems that it's where you create a pleat in the garment. Al eitz chalok, and it's done on a flat piece of wood. Oy al aguda shel koshim, or on a bunch of kash is straw. So it would be a bundle of straw. The Koran, and it's called that in French, Maisa Umanhu. This action of making folds in clothing is a professional type activity. You need to be an expert, an artisan in this. V'osir, and that would be prohibited on Yom Tov. Uktura Loshon Kesher. The Gemara mentioned that Keturah is allowed. Well, Keturah would be a lotion of something tied together. It would seem to me that it's a reference to the straw that's tied together in a bundle that's used in this process of making the folds, the crease in the clothing. So if Keturah, Shori, that Reish Galusa that was publicized in this lecture at the house of the Reish Galusa, well, if it's Keturah Bidi, this form or this action of making a crease in clothing, well, as the Gemara says, Maisa Umanhu, it's an act requiring an artisan, and such an action would not be allowed on Yom Tov. Vila Ashen, and if it is Ashen, and this we saw in our previous discussion, where you Keturah is a Loshon of smoke. It also can mean smoke, and we saw in our previous shiur where people would burn a type of a spice and place fruits over the spice, over the smoke while it was burning, and that would impart a good taste or aroma to the food item. So if that is what Keturah, that Rav Gvia was permitting, so that too is a problem. Also, it would be prohibited to call mechabe, because when you place the either the spices or the fruits on the coals, when you sprinkle the spices on the coals, you're putting the coals are getting extinguished, and extinguishing is not something that is allowed on Yom Tov. Omar Le Rav Ashi. So Ameimar asks, what is the Keturah that Rav Gvia was allowing? So Rav Ashi responds, Li'oilom La'ashen. It is, in fact, this process of sprinkling spices over coals, creating smoke, And if you'll ask, well, what about the fact that the coals are going out initially? Midi dehave abisra agomri. It is similar to Bisra's meat agomri placed on coals. One is allowed on Yom Tov to, let us say, take a steak and throw it on coals and roast the steak that way. But in the process of preparing the steak on the coals, the meat on the coals are initially going out. They're being extinguished temporarily. And yet, that is allowed. It's part of the ochel nefesh that is allowed, actions, activities that are in the interest of food preparation, which are allowed on Yom Tov. Iko diamri. Now, a second version of this discussion. Omele Amemar, Maiktura. Amemar asks, what is ketura? E ketura bidi, if it's the making of creases in garments, maise umanhu, that is an act requiring artisanship, and that's forbidden on Yom Tov. E la'ashen, and if it's to impart the aroma of the spices into the fruits, usur, to call moilid recha. There is a new isser, an isser of creating anew. Moilid recha, moilid is maybe similar to the word nola that many of you are familiar with in the realm of mukta. It's something new, and we saw Rashi on the third line from the top of this omid, where you see the dashed underlining, we have emphasized. Rashi says, "Shamoilid davar chadash korov hu la'oisem alocha chadasha." When you're making something new, here you're imparting a new aroma or taste in the fruits, so that is like a malocha. It's like a creative activity which is forbidden on Yom Tov. So how could Rav Gevia lecture that it's allowed? Omar le Ravashi, ano amriso nihale, umishmei degavro rabo amriso nihale. Ravashi says, I said unto him, and in the name of a great man, I said the following, li'olam la'ashen, that what Rav Gevia was explaining, what he said, ketura shori, is in fact the spice burning process. And you'll ask, why is it mutter? Is there not a problem of being moilid reach? Midi dehave abisra agomri. Similar to the roasting of meat on coals, when you throw a piece of steak on coals, the meat taste is being imparted into the meat. Let's say the meat aroma is being imparted into the coals, and that does not bother us. It is not reason enough to prevent it on Yom Tov. So it's therefore allowed. V'oisen gedi mekulas. This was in our Mishnah. We saw that they would prepare a gedi, is a goat. Mekulas is where the goat is roasted whole with its legs and organs to its side. We saw this in the Mishnah when we explained it there. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Todos Ish Romi. Todos, name of a leading figure in Rome, was a Jewish fellow, a pious man. Hinig es b'nei Romi lechol gedi mekulas b'levei psochim. He had them practice preparing this kind of roasted goat on Pesach night, what we call the Leil Seder, the Seder night. Shalchu lei, and the rabbis sent to him. If you weren't the great Todos, great man, Gozoranu Olecholidi, we would excommunicate you. Sha'atomachil es b'nei Yisrael. We skip the brackets for a moment. Ke'ein kochim, because you are having them eat in a way that was similar to the way things were done in the base Amigdash. And people who see this will think that the meat that your community is eating was sanctified as a Korban Pesach, because this is the way the Korban Pesach was in fact prepared in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, it was slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash and it was offered as a sacrifice, and then in the area of Jerusalem they would prepare their Korban Pesachs in that way. So now let's go over the Gemara again. The information in the brackets is there's an expression that needs upgrading, and so we read the upgrade already, but what was the original text? So they had sent a message to Todos that objected to what he was practicing in his community. And they said, Gozranu alecho nidu shata machil es b'nei Yisrael kotshim b'chutz. But you are having the community eat korbonus, kotshim, or sanctified animals, korbonus, outside the Beis HaMikdash, which is strictly forbidden. Kotshim salka daita. What do you mean he was feeding them kotshim? They weren't eating kotshim. Nothing was sanctified. In order for something to be kotshim, it would have to be sanctified. And no one had sanctified anything. Eloemo, rather, kein kotshim. What you are doing is practicing a way of preparing the meat in your community the way korbanos were prepared, specifically the korban pesach was prepared, and that will create a wrong impression in the eyes of the masses, namely that you can eat and prepare sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. So because of the wrongful impression that you're creating, you would have deserved to be excommunicated had it not been for the fact that you are a pious man and all of your intentions were really l'shem shamayim. The Mishnah. Shloisha dvorim Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mati v'chachomim oisrin. There are three things, and this is kind of in the spirit of the previous Mishnayos where we saw Rabbi Gamliel and his three practices, sometimes lahachmir, and the second after that lahokel. Here we have three matters in which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is lenient, he allows, and the chachomim restrict. Number one, porosoi yoitza birutzua shebein karneha. This is a Hilchus Shabbos issue of an animal. An animal is not allowed to do malochus, just as people are not allowed to do malochus on Shabbos. An animal cannot do malochus on Shabbos either. That's in a general framework. And for example, one cannot load an animal up with things and have the animal carry it out for him on Shabbos. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had his animal with a ritzua, a strap that was tied between the animal's horns for decorative purposes, and the Rabbonin did not agree with that. They viewed that strap as a burden and not as something decorative. What else? Number two, umekardin es habeim obiyomtov. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah allowed the combing of an animal with a comb that has fine teeth to it. Now, a fine tooth comb, when combing the animal with it, could cause a scratch in the animal where it would start to bleed, and that's called making a chabura. So even though there was this possibility of a chabura being made, he allowed the combing. Number three, v'shochakin es apilpulin b'rechaim shalahem. And he would allow the grinding of peppercorns in their grinders. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Makardin Esavei B'Yom Tov. Rabbi Yehuda says you cannot do Makardin because it makes a scratch, an injury in the animal. Avo Makartsefin. But you can comb the animal using a wide-toothed comb where wide-toothed comb will not make a chabura. And it could be pointed out that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't aser Makartsefin in anticipation of someone confusing it with Makardin. So he is a type of middle ground. The Chachomim Omrim Ein Makardin Af Lo Makartsefin. The Chachomim are more extreme than Rabbi Yehuda, and they say not only can you not do Makardin, but you can't even do Makartsefin because of the fear of, if we allow Makartsefin, the thick tooth comb, people will use a fine tooth comb also. The Gemara asks, regarding Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it mentioned in the Mishnah that his cow went out on Shabbos with this strap between its horns. It indicates, the grammar of the Mishnah indicates that he had a singular cow, his cow. And we know, though, and Gemara will point this out, that Rebbe Elazar ben Nazir had much more than one cow. On the side, our Nosei, the topic heading, is Mispar Behemos Shehoyu Rebbe Elazar ben Nazir, the number of animals that he actually possessed. So the Gemara continues, Lameimra, the Rebbe Elazar ben Azaria Chada Pora Havyole. Does our Mishnah come to suggest that Rebbe Elazar ben Azaria had one cow, as the language indicated, his cow in the singular, Poroso? That's not true, though. The Omar Rav, the Amri Law, another version of names, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Rav Yehuda quoting Rav, says, Tlesar Alfi Egle Have Me'aser Rebbe Elazar ben Azaria Me'edre Kol Shasa V'Shasa. Rav Yehuda Marav tells us that Rav Elazar ben Azaria had 13,000 calves that were born each year in his herd. And the 13,000 was not the number of calves that were born. It was actually one-tenth of the number of calves that were born. He had taken 13,000 calves and separated them as Meiser Behemo. Meiser Behemo is the tithe that one separates from his animals, and they are offered as sacrifices in the Beis Hamikdash. So he tithed of his, that means he had 130,000 calf births in any given year. 10%, the Meiser Behemo, is 13,000. You can imagine then the vast number of animals that Rebbe Elazar ben Azaria happened to own. Therefore, the Mishnah would appear to be misleading. The Gemara explains, Tana, lo shelo hoisa. The cow featured in the Mishnah was not his personal cow. Elo shel shchenoso hoisa. It was his neighbor's cow. And since he, Rebbe Elazar ben Azaria, who was a great rabbinic figure, didn't protest his neighbor's behavior in her allowing her animal to walk out with this strap, Nikres al Shemo. It's called his. In other words, he's blamed, so to speak, for it. And hence the Mishnah refers to it as his cow. It was his neighbor's cow, but he remained silent in the offense that was committed. Umekarden es abeim b'yom tov. Tonu Rabbanan. Ezu kirud ve'ezu kirtzuf. The two expressions we saw in the Mishnah, Mekarden and Mekartzen, were now being explained. What are they? Kirud ktanim. It's a comb with fine teeth. Ktana means little, small teeth. The oisin chabura, and using that in combing the animal, it will result in it being scratched. Kirtzuf, gedolim, are wide tooth, large teeth. The ain oisin chabura, and they don't create an injury, a scratch in the animal. The gimel machlokas badover. The Mishnah points out that there are three different opinions on this matter, and the triangles highlight the different opinions, the names, the shittas that we saw in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Sovar, Dovar She'eno Miskavein Oser. A forbidden result of an action on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, that's called Dovah She'enu Miskavein, something that you did not have intention for. But if it's likely that it will result, so it's usur. It's usur to engage in an activity, the result of which will likely be a forbidden result. Miu, however, kirud ktanim vosel chabura. The use of the small tooth, the fine tooth comb, that in fact Rebbe Yehuda prohibits, because it's likely that a chabura will result, the injury will result. Kirtzuf gedolim v'ein oisin chabura. The kirtzuf is combing using a wide tooth comb, which does not create an injury. The teeth are rather dull. V'lo gazrinon kirtzuf otu kirut. Rav Yehuda, as we saw in the Mishnah, does not prohibit kirtzuf. He said mekartzim, you're allowed in lekartzef, but you're not allowed to the karid. So he doesn't prohibit kirtsuf simply because it might lead to confusing it with kirut. V'rabbanan savri nami k'rebuda. The rabbanan hold like k'rebuda dover sheino miskavin aser, that the intentional prohibited result does create restriction, and hence, like Reb Yehuda, because of Dover Shein Miskaven being Osir, so Mekardin is Osir, is forbidden. But the Rabbanan go further. V'gazrinon kirtsuf otu kirut. They restrict even kirtsuf, which is the combing with a wide, dull tooth comb, because of the possible confusion with kirut. For Velozer ben Azariah, Sovar, he was the first opinion, the most lenient. He holds Sovar like Rabbi Shimon. He holds like the Tana, Rabbi Shimon, Diomar Dover She'eno Miskaven Muter. That if the prohibited result is something that's not inevitable. In other words, if you comb in the, we'll call it Mekardin fashion, it could be done, possibly done, without a Chabura resulting. In the event that a chabura results, then we classify that as something that was unintentional. And as such, dover shein miskaven mutar is allowed. Ubein kirud, ubein kirtsuf shori. Kirud is allowed, and certainly kirtsuf, which is done with the dull tooth comb. Omar Rava, Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel. Another version of names, Omar Rav Nachman Lichudei. Rav Nachman on his own, without quoting Rav Shmuel. Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, Sheharei Reb Elozer ben Azariah modeloi. Now here we translate. Rav Nachman paskins like Rabbi Shimon, meaning that Dover She'eino Miskaven is Mutter, because we see Reb Elozer ben Azariah subscribing to that. Amalei Rava Rav Nachman. Rava asks, "V'leimo mor halacha k'Reb Yehuda? Why don't you paskin like Reb Yehuda that Dover Sheinu Miskaven is Osir? Sharei Chachomim Odim Lo. We see the Chachomim agree with him." Amalei, so Rav Nachman clarifies, "Ano k'Reb Shimon Svirolei. I hold like Reb Shimon. I rule like Reb Shimon without additional reasons. I simply hold like Reb Shimon." The ode, and furthermore, Sharei Reb Elozer ben Azariah modelo. And furthermore, just to add to that, if you will, is that Reb Elozer ben Azariah also holds like that. But what's the refinement we see here? Rav Nachman is saying that he's not saying here I hold like Rabbi Shimon simply because Reb Elozer ben Azariah holds like that, but I have a basic opinion like that of Rabbi Shimon. And furthermore, just to strengthen it, it should be noted that Reb Elozer ben Azariah also subscribes to it. We continue on Omid Beis, Mishnah at the top, Horechayim Shel Pilpulin. It's interesting to note that, like you might be asking, this Mishnah which deals with Tumah, what connection does it have with at all with our Gemara? So it's noteworthy that in Reb Elozer ben Azariah's 3 points, he said, we grind peppercorns in their grinder, in their rechaim shalahem. So now we're continuing to talk about peppercorn grinders. Pepper is a well-known spice, pilpel it's called in Hebrew. Harechaim shel pilpelin, this grinder, tamea mishum shlosha kelim. Tamea means it is susceptible to defilement based on 3 different aspects that form this particular entity known as a Rechayim Shel Pilpulin. The Tosfos at the top says, Mishum Shlosha Kelim Pirush V'im Nitmozeh Lo Nitmozeh. If one of the 3 aspects of the vessel of this entity becomes Tomei, the other part of this apparatus does not become Tomei. So when we speak about a grinder, it's really made of 3 different vessels that are put together. And Tosfos says, "Afilu b'shas melacha shein kulon yachad." Even when they're all assembled in a functional capacity as a grinder, if let us say a dead sheretz touches one of the 3 components, the other 2 are not defiled. Since each one of the components has a separate function. And he goes on, Tosis goes on to say, and it's not like a scissors. Scissors essentially is made of two blades that are fastened together. An Ismail Sharitni is a carpenter's plane, which is a metal device that's affixed into a wooden frame and hence becomes useful. A scissors or a carpenter's plane, when they are being used, they're considered more together, more attached than the peppercorn grinder apparatus. So now, continuing with the Mishnah, the Rechayim Shalpilvan is Tameo Mishum Shloisha Kalim, Mishum Klei Kibul. One of it has a receptacle. One part of the pepper grinder is a receptacle. Umishum Klei Matris. One is metal, umishum klei kvara, and the other is a sifter. The Gemara elaborates a bit. It presents a Tanaic source, tana, tachtoino, mishum klei kibul, the bottommost kli, the bottommost vessel of this peppercorn grinder is a bowl, and it's a kli kibul, and if it's made of wood, since it has a receptacle capacity, it's mekabel tuma. This is in contrast, for example, to a flat piece of wood, we call pshute kliets, which would not be subject to defilement. So we describe the bottommost part of the grinder, which the part that receives the ground pepper, the powder, if you will. If it's a wooden bowl, since it has a receptacle capacity, it's subject to defilement in the event that a source of defilement would have contact with it. And so is the middle part of the peppercorn grinder apparatus, mishum klei kvora. In the middle, you have a sieve. In other words, the top part is grinding, and the when you're grinding the peppercorn, so there's a part that's debris and part that is the fine powder. So the debris is larger. It's caught in the Kli Kvara, in the sieve section of it. Elyona Mishum Kli Matris. The uppermost is the part of the grinder where the peppercorns are crushed. And it happens to be made of metal. And since it's metal, even though it doesn't have a base kibble to it, it doesn't have a receptacle aspect portion, nevertheless, it's mekabel tuma because it is metal. Matris means it's made of iron or metal. The Mishnah. Agola shel katan. In the spirit of Kabbalah's tuma, so we have this Mishnah that speaks about a agola. Agola can be translated as a cart. Tosfos explains it's a what we call a walker. Children who are learning to walk would hold this three-wheeled device. According to Rashi, the agola is a wagon that children play with. So the agola shokotan tmea medris. It's subject to tumas medris. That would mean that if a zav, Rashi speaks about a child that is a zav. A zav is a type of emission that comes forth from males, and it creates tuma. So if the child is experiencing this emission, and just parenthetically, we're not familiar with this emission nowadays, but if a child who is a zav rests on this agola, it will mekabel tumas medris. Tumas medris is a level of tuma where the vessel could then impart tuma to someone else, or to kalim. In other words, the agola becomes an av hatuma. It's a primary level tuma entity. Viniteles bishabas. It is considered a vessel, hence it's not mukta, and it can be handled, moved on Shabbos. V'eino nigreres elo agabi kalim. When it comes to Shabbos, this agola should not be drawn or moved on dirt, but rather on cloth. The Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol hakelim ein nigrorim chutz minu agola v'tnei shi koveshes. Section of the Mishnah is not easy to understand. We'll have to wait for the Gemara because there's certain aspects that seem to be problematic or obviously problematic. Rabbi Yehuda says that all kinds of vessels are not to be dragged along dirt floors, except for the agola, which can be because it doesn't dig into the ground, which would be a problem of choresh, of type of plowing action, which is a molocha that's also on Shabbos. However, the wagon or the walker with its wheels doesn't dig up the earth like a plow would do, but rather it simply, where the wheels, the section of the dirt that the wheels roll over, it compresses the ground so that the ditch that may appear isn't a result of a digging action, but rather a result of the ground being compressed. And that is not forbidden. What is forbidden on Shabbos is an action, Rashi refers to chafira, a digging action, an action that would be like that of a plow. We continue now in the Gemara. On the side, we assigned a topic heading, the Nosei Agola Shel Kotten, Hamoshcho, one who draws the Agola of the Kotten, Oise Charitz, Oi Rak Kovesh. Does he create a ditch, or does he simply compress the ground? And when we say create a ditch, we mean create a ditch through Chafira, through a digging action. The Gemara, Agola shel Kotten Tumei Medras, it is subject to Tumas Medras. We've mentioned in other Shirim, if you look at the word Medras in a phonetic way, you can see the word mattress. There's a lot of significance to that. A mattress is something that's designed for leaning on, for resting on, for reclining. Only vessels that are designed for your placing weight on them, if you're sitting or reclining, or the case of the wagon, the child rides in it, or a walker that he rests on, that only those kind of vessels are subject to this level of tuma called tumas medris, like mattress, tumas medris, which, as we said before, once the mattress or the wagon becomes tume, it can impart tuma even to a person or another vessel, which is fairly unusual when it comes to laws of Tuma and Tara. And now, why does the Agola Shel Kotan makabel this level of Tuma called Tumas Medrash? The Hos Samich Ulya, because he rests upon it. The child rests upon it. In other words, it's designed for resting. V'nitelas b'Shabbos, one's allowed to move it on Shabbos, mishum de'ikah teras kli Allah. It is considered a vessel, and it's a functional item, and hence one is allowed to move it on Shabbos. It's not considered muktzah. V'eino nigreres el agabi kelim. It can be drawn, we saw in our Mishnah, only if you're dragging it along on a surface of a cloth surface. Kelim, the reference to either clothing or cloth, fabric. Main point is, al gabi kelim in, al gabi karka lo. On cloth, yes. On the ground, no. My taimo. Why? The ka of it charitz. The action of dragging of drawing a cart on the dirt floor could result. It's possible it will result in a ditch being formed. Money. So who would the author of that be? Rebbe Yehudahi. This would be in accordance with Rebbe Yehuda Domar, Dover Shein Miskavi Nosser. We saw that opinion expressed earlier in today's Shiur, that a forbidden action that results, a forbidden result that results from an action, so such an action would be prohibited. And when we speak about Dover Shein Miskavi, we're talking about a type of action that could result in a forbidden result. The one who restricts that type of activity, even though you didn't have intention for the forbidden result to result, nevertheless, it could result, even, again, we're repeating ourselves, even though it was without intention. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that says such actions are usur, forbidden. De'i Rabbi Shimon, if this Mishnah was reflecting Rabbi Shimon, ha'amar davar shein meskavin mutar, his opinion is that as long as you didn't have intention for the forbidden result, the action is allowed, even if a forbidden result happened to take place. This Sanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon has said, Gorer odo mito kisev v'safsol, a person's allowed to drag a bed, a chair, a bench on a floor. And when we speak about a floor, we're not talking about a tile floor, we're talking about a dirt floor. Now, in dragging a bed, a chair, or a bench on a dirt floor, it's likely that a ditch will result. Rabbi Shimon says it's okay. It's okay provided you did not have that as your intention. So far, now we didn't point out earlier, but you can see because you have the mark Gemara, even without my telling you, you see that we're in the midst of a long question. We're trying to set up authorship of the Mishnah. So up till this point, starting from the line where our long question marking began, where there was a quote from the Mishnah that says, Eino nigreris agabi kalim, we came to the conclusion at that point that our Mishnah must be authored by Rabbi Yehuda. And why is that? Because the dragging of the cart on a dirt floor has the potential of making a haritz. So let's emphasize that. We'll repeat that point. The dragging of a cart on a dirt floor, according to our Mishnah, according to the middle section of the Mishnah, is forbidden because the ka'ovid haritz. It can make a ditch. Let's continue. Emo seifa. That means we continue reading the end of the Mishnah Seifa, like where it's sof, the end. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Hakol Nigroren B'Shabbos. All kinds of vessels, of articles, cannot be drawn on a dirt floor. Chutz Min Ha'agola, except for the wagon, or the walker, as Tosfos said, that they Shu'i Koveshes. The wheels of the wagon or walker compress. They don't make a ditch. The wagon does not create a ditch. Notice the markings. We have a dashed underlining. Charitz lo avda. The agola does not make a charitz. What did we say above about the agola? The dashed underlining above. The ka'ovid charitz. It does make a charitz. It does make a ditch. So, are we not in the midst of a contradiction within the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? And you notice, in addition, we have dot underlined Rabbi Yehuda's name above and over here. So if you just combine the markings, you have above, there's a little arrow we've supplied to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text as well. The upper arrow points to a line where you see Rabbi Yehuda associated with the Agola of Ikaritz. And here we have Rabbi Yehuda associated with Haritz Lo'av, that does not make a Haritz. It would appear to be a contradiction. The Gemara answers, Tre Tanoi V'Aliba of Rabbi Yehuda. What we see in our Mishnah, in effect, are really two later Tanaic opinions as to what Rabbi Yehuda holds, or how he describes the action of the Agola. The first opinion categorizes the agola like other vessels, that when one drags them on a dirt floor, it will it can make a ditch. And Rashi adds, because at times the wagon wheels or the walker wheels get caught and they don't spin around, and the dragging of it in with stuck wheels will cause a ditch to form through a digging action. The other opinion, the second presentation of Buda, says it's very unusual, it's not common, and therefore you look at what it commonly does, and the common description of a wagon or a cart drawn along the ground is that it compresses the dirt under the wheel and does not work in a digging fashion. At this point, you can see that we have completed the second perek of Maseches Be'ah. Just a couple lines remain for the Omid, which is represents the beginning of the third perek. This would be a convenient pausing point for our Daf Yomi Shiur. Before we actually conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our Shiur for today.